Launching a software product is a challenge in and of itself, but sometimes the challenge happens right after that. Once you launch, how do you generate leads? Who should you even generate leads from? And how do you close those leads? What do you do next to get over that hump and get to a 10K, 20K, 30K per month revenue? Well, Graham Curry, he's with Handycaddy, and he's actually one of my clients, and he was able to get through some of those early stages, but struggled in some others. So I helped him through it, and he said, hey, I want to come on the podcast and just share my journey with other founders. I said, great, come on. And so he does a great job here of sharing what he's been able to do and walking you through the good, the bad, the ugly of what he's done so you can take his best things and apply it yourself so you can get the type of success he's getting. He's now in all kinds of different markets around the world. His company's growing great. It's so fun to see it. Check out what he's done and see what you can apply to your own business.
Welcome to Scale Your SaaS, the podcast that gives you proven techniques and formulas for boosting your revenue and achieving your dream exit. Brought to you by a guy who's done just that multiple times. Here is your host, Matt Wallach.
And welcome to Scale Your SaaS. Thank you very much for being here. I am delighted to have you join us because what we're here to do is help you grow your software company, whether it's generate a lot of new leads, know how to close those leads, and scale your team so that you can have other people doing it for you. We're going to help scale your SaaS. And each week I bring in an awesome guest who's either a SaaS founder or somebody helping SaaS founders so they can share their experience and their knowledge with you so that you can grow. If you want those things, hit subscribe right now. That way you're subscribed to the show. You'll get all the updates and notifications when we bring in awesome guests and amazing people and put them in front of you. And one of those amazing people happens to be also one of my clients, the amazing Graham Curry. Graham, welcome.
Hi, everyone. Great to be here. Matt, pleasure to come on our show, I guess, following being on your coaching program. So yeah, looking forward to dive in and hopefully share some of the learnings that you have kindly shared to me during the program.
Fantastic. And I really have had a good time working with you and just seeing how quickly you can take things and implement them and grow. It's been a lot of fun, but I want to make sure everybody knows who you are, Graham. So let me introduce you a little bit. So Graham, he is the founder of Handycaddy. This is a software that dramatically reduces the administrative burden for caddy scheduling at top golf clubs around the world. As a big time golfer, as soon as I met Graham and I knew this was his product, I was like so entrenched in the idea of working with him because it's such a cool idea. He did this. He learned this from being a caddy and a caddy master himself for the last 10 years in Irish and Scottish golf courses, including Kings Barnes Golf Links and Castle Rock Golf Club. Graham has identified an exciting opportunity to provide a digital solution to help staff streamline how their caddy program is run. So it's really cool what he's been able to do. And by the way, I've seen some of his conversations in his demos and such. These people love this thing. He's done a great job of creating this, taking this idea, creating the product, and getting people around the world to start using this thing. He's also the host of the Future of Golf podcast. So definitely check that out, the Future of Golf podcast. A lot of cool stuff. But Graham, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, and I think you've sold me a lot better than I would sell myself, Matt. You've definitely teed up the intro. And obviously, yeah, being a fellow golfer as well, I think that was one of the things that definitely appealed to me in working with you, that you're in the golf industry and we could kind of riff in those things as well. I know you're talking about playing a few courses that we're hopefully going to work with next year as well. So hopefully I can actually directly help you out as well, which would be cool.
Yeah, it would be amazing for my name to pop up in your program under your caddy scheduling and all that. That'd be a lot of fun. But tell me what's been going on with you lately and what do you have coming up?
Yeah, well, this is our busy time of year right now, Matt, because the golf season, as you well know, is a finite period in many parts of the world. So typically you're talking from April to October is the real hot season for golf, especially for fair weather golfers like myself, who typically go out in shirts like this and shorts. So right now, because we've had a good period in winter where our sales has really progressed thanks to your help and really formalizing the sales process, we're now actually facing the opposite problem of we've got a ton of onboarding to do. And now our focus is actually fulfilling those customer requests, dealing with things of people actually coming on and like little teething onboarding problems. But I think we're actually so grateful to have those problems, because it was very much the opposite last year, and that it was just purely outreach focused. Obviously a lot less demand than what we have now. But I actually put a post on LinkedIn about this the other day. I feel like we're transitioning out of the period where it's just outreach and it's almost using brute force to get your first 10 customers. I feel like we've passed that now, and now I'm really in the period of, you know, identifying our ideal customer profile and just being like super focused for that specific group, and really focusing on, you know, what features we need to build out to just give them the best experience in our product. So yeah, from a very high level, all is moving right now and going in the right direction.
So fun. Such an energizing and fun time when you're building a software program that you've gotten past that kind of initial hurdle of, will anybody actually, we just put a lot of work in this. Is anybody actually going to give us money for this thing? You're past that. You've got some good clients. You've been able to generate some great interest. So, you know, like you said, it's a fortunate problem to have. They say once you've reached a new level, you have a new devil. There's another problem that we need to overcome. And you're right. Initially, it's, holy cow, we need leads. We need somebody to actually come see this thing. And then it's like, okay, we've got business. How do we onboard all these people? How do we make it happen? And it's kind of crazy how your mind has to shift a little bit, right?
Yeah. And it's also the different emotional tests that puts you through. So initially, my challenge was obviously just the actual output that you have to do. So it's just, can you sit on a chair and write out 50 emails or do 50 cold calls? And now it's like, it still is that to a degree, of course, like volume of output, there has to be a certain discipline to that. But it's also, you know, it's more strategic now in terms of, okay, we've got a club that says they want to use it, but is this actually a club we want to take on based on the constraints that we've identified in our ICP? And obviously me being in sales, I'm like, hell yeah, it's another 5 or 10K annual recurring revenue. And I mean, it takes a lot of discipline for me to say, perhaps it might not be. And like, I'm not perfect at that. I'm still getting better at that for sure. But my software team keeps me disciplined in that as well, whenever their product requests keep going up and up and up. So yeah, trying to get better at that every day.
Yeah, I mean, knowing your ICP and making sure you stick to your ICP is really critical. For everybody out there wondering what we're talking about ICP, that's ideal customer profile, your perfect customer, somebody who fits exactly, who's going to get a lot of value out of using your product, and somebody you want to work with and sell to. So that's what we're talking about. And it's critical. It's like one of the first things we need to do. But you're right, Graham, sticking to it and actually making sure that you only sell to those people can be a challenge. But I actually want to take us way back now. I know you're in this growth mindset. You're doing great with it. But how did Handycaddy get started? Where did this whole thing come from?
Yeah. Wow. So, I mean, I started playing golf when I was 13. And it was strange because no one in my family actually plays golf. And it was actually one of my friends. I remember the day so vividly. We were out playing football, or soccer, as it would be called in America. So we were just going about our business, and one of our friends had played golf for the last 6 months and said, do you want to try it? And we were actually quite reluctant to start off. We were like, nah, it's for like old people. And and then we said, oh, fine, we'll go along. So I think we went to the driving range with like a few rusty 3-irons, like one of the bladed like butter knife 3-irons that you get back in the 70s from like a garage sale or something. And obviously like hit terrible shot. And I think I hit one that was like reasonable that went 100 yards. And that like sensation that goes through your hands of just pure pleasure, I was like, oh, damn, I think I actually want to do this for a little bit. So then that started my journey of becoming a member at a golf club. So I played at a course called Castle Rock, which is probably one of the premier venues in Ireland. It's situated beside an Open Championship venue called Royal Portrush, which is where Shane Lowry won his Open, for any golfers out there. And then because I played at a golf club, when you're a young member of a golf club, there typically is opportunities to caddy and to work for visitors. So in Ireland, it was actually taking care of a lot of Americans that are on their holidays and they're on a tour. Maybe they're doing like a whiskey tour of Ireland and they've fitted in a bit of golf, or perhaps vice versa. And then that gave me the experience of the caddying industry. So that was a phenomenal job because it combined my passion. You know, I was out in a golf course. I was really happy. And also gave me great insight into your people skills. Like, you actually have to entertain, as a 14-year-old, you have to entertain what might be this really wealthy businessman for 5 hours on a golf course. How does your conversational skills stack up to that? And you know, you're like, as a 14-year-old, your small talk skills are next to zero. So I had to learn very fast and become genuinely interested in the person. And usually, you know, walking down the first fairway, you can gauge what kind of person that is. Like, is it someone that, you know, is a bit introverted and just wants to speak to his group? Or is it someone that's here to drink 10 beers and have a laugh? And then you kind of go along with that. So that was obviously a learning phase, and I learned how the caddying industry operated through that next 5 years.
Can I pause you right there? Because that's really interesting what you just said. So that process, when you're 14, of learning how to small talk, learning how to identify people and understand what type of person they were really quickly, are those skills that you still use today in your sales?
I would hope so. Yeah, I think one thing that I learned from that definitely that I can apply was just empathy, like understanding what a customer wants out of a service. And like, I guess it kind of goes back to the discovery side of it. Like, I guess that was like a micro version of discovery. I remember asking them down the fairway, like, oh, what are you hoping to get out of this round? Perhaps in a less formal way than that. But they would either say, oh, I'm just here for like bit of fun and like you know, like just have fun with my buddies, or I'm here to try and wreck the course record and I need every specific line. So then based on their needs, then you tailor your service to that. So that's a great point, actually. I never considered it that way.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it. And I know you're very good at that now, so obviously you had to cut your teeth and learn all that somewhere. That's really cool that's where it happened. Okay, yeah. So I stopped you in your journey. Okay, go ahead and continue.
Yeah. So obviously at 19 years old, I was still caddying. I was at university that time. So I had no idea what I wanted to do at university. So I just picked business management. I thought it's not going to rule me out of any career path. So I think it's a general degree. I'll go with that. And it was a train journey coming down from Belfast to my home place in the north of Ireland. And I was going to like entrepreneurial events, and I didn't have an idea for a business at the time. And I think I knew at that point that I was interested in startups, but I just didn't have that moment of inspiration. And I remember I listened to a talk, and I can't remember who it was, but they mentioned that typically startup ideas come from problems that you experience in your day-to-day life. So I remember in that train journey, I kind of took a bit of an audit of my life and identified where the problems were occurring and then where my passion was. And there was just this massively obvious gap in golf where I was like, this is something I'm really frustrated about in terms of I don't have any guarantee on jobs I'm getting. I know that the process is painful for golf clubs because they have a list of 100 guys and they're making 4 hours of phone calls every day. And then I actually did a placement whenever I was in school when I was like 17. I worked in a pro shop for a while in a golf club, and I really enjoyed that process. And I thought if I can combine golf and business at some point in my life, I thought that would be great. So to have that idea early on, I think was a real blessing. And it's obviously allowed me to pursue that for the next couple of years.
Oh, I love it. That's so, so cool. It's just such a fun story. And I can tell that it's just so such a big part of you and who you are. And when you can create a company and a platform coming out of something that you've experienced, it just means that much more. It's just so cool. So well done on that. I want to understand. So you got it launched. How were those early days? Like, okay, we built this thing. Now what? Like, what happened? How'd you get through that?
Yeah. Well, the building phase was a really interesting one in getting our first few customers. So I'm not the technical side of this. I'm very much the sales side of it. So, you know, I had an idea for a product. I'd wireframed it out. So for anyone that doesn't know what that is, there's wireframing tools like Figma or Adobe XD that's taking it from like a paper sketch to what looks like an app, but actually isn't an app. And we showed a golf club in Ireland and they really liked it. And they said, great, our season starts in 10 weeks. If you can build that out for us, then we'll use it. And I'd gathered some funding from different sources. And I just sat there going like, how am I going to build this thing in 10 weeks? And just out of complete luck, I don't know how this happened, but about 2 days later, A guy direct messaged me on LinkedIn after I outreached and said, I'm looking for a software engineer for this project. So this guy was working with this club currently, and he ran their Shopify store for their members. So obviously this was during the pandemic, so they were selling all their merchandise online. So he ran the Shopify store for them and had a great relationship with that club already. In fact, such a great relationship that the guy working in the pro shop was the best man at his wedding. So wow. They were best friends originally. It turns out, so this guy, Jamie, who's my co-founder, if he's bothering to watch this. His mother and my mother were very friendly growing up. He actually went to my school and he played at my home golf club, and I'd never met him in my life.
Wow.
So it was just this crazy scenario. And then we said, we got to book a round of golf and actually figure this out. So we played our home course, Castle Rock. And at the end of the round, we said, okay, let's do this. Let's actually give this a go. So 10 weeks of getting our head down and building out a very sketchy minimum viable product, and then getting it in the hands of the users. And then once our Glass Golf Club, who was our first customer, used it, then we got 4 pretty quickly just from their referrals, from their experience. And obviously our product was super simple at that stage. So we thought, you know, we know what this could potentially be, and this is a super scrappy version of it. So then I think that gave us the motivation to say, you know, let's really pursue this as a career and try and get the next 10 customers on, you know?
So cool. I love the story. It, having a strong partner is a big deal, isn't it?
Right. Like, you know, I worked in this for probably about a year and a half on my own. And honestly, I was 19, so I didn't really know what I was doing. It was more research gathering. I did a bit of a road trip around Ireland where I actually drove up to the clubs and like cold approached them and just asked them about the problem. It was an excuse just to play golf everywhere, to be honest. But yeah, like having someone, especially with a software and a really logical head on their shoulders to come back to with issues. And also it's, you know, yourself, it's like the emotional support of going through this as well. Like someone to be there for you, you know, 90% of it is going to be those tough times when you're really figuring it out. But then it also makes it sweeter when you do get a big deal that you have someone to go back and say, hey, today's went really well, you know? So it's, it makes the journey double fun.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's so cool because I know you're just telling your story, but there are so many lessons we can get out of this story. First of all, you have to meet your customers. You have to learn from your customers. What are they hearing? What is their feeling? What are they going through? What keeps them up at night? What are their goals? And you went out and did that. You went out and drove to them. Of course, you had the excuse to play golf, but you went and met your customers and started having these conversations with your perfect ideal fit customers. You also have to have great partners. You had a great partner on board. You have to be able to share with others what you do. You were posting on LinkedIn and you just found your partner that way. And others, I'm sure, have also come to you that way. But there's so many things that I teach that you did naturally, which is fantastic, but I'm glad you're sharing it because a lot of people out there listening might not have done this naturally, but sometimes we fall into great ideas. I'm not saying that you didn't know anything you were doing, but sometimes you just do things and it happens to work great. And looking back, you can see how big of an effect that was. And it's so cool about some of these awesome decisions that you made that helped you get to where you are now. And I don't know if you can see that the way I see it.
Yeah. Right. And I mean, I look back and I look at the first year and a half and it was very much doing things instinctually based on what I felt was right. Like I wasn't engrossed in the entrepreneurship space. My knowledge was very limited. So it was just instinctively reacting to like human behavior in terms of like supply demand, like why would this person want to use this product? And then kind of fundamentally reverse engineering that to what I need to do then. But I mean, if I knew what, I mean, obviously you can say this in hindsight, but I wish I could go back? Maybe not, but there's obviously things I could have done that would have sped up the process significantly. And obviously there was a pandemic in between that where golf was completely shut. So there was no real possibility of getting users. But I'm grateful for that time as well because it allowed me to mature and understand what the product actually needed to be. I don't think I was ready to launch an app at that point. And then that it actually coincided brilliantly with me leaving college at the time. So then I had more time to invest in it. So you can say it's all worked out, but obviously I'm still right in the middle of the process as well. So it's worked out to date so far.
Yeah, I mean, you're doing great. You're on your way up, and it's really cool to see. One thing I want to ask you about, you talked about how, of course, golf in many areas of the world, it's seasonal. And so that creates a big challenge for you selling to these golf courses. In fact, lots of people have an app, have a software platform that they're selling to an industry that's very seasonal. How have you handled it to this point? And what are some of your focuses around? Maybe do you go with it? Do you try to make it more flat throughout the year? What do you do?
Yeah, it's a good question. And especially for us starting out, because our focus was very narrow on the UK and Ireland market, where it is as a very seasonal business. April to October will be what the golf season is. So honestly, we didn't fight it starting off. We just said our pricing was actually usage based at that time. So you pretty much paid for each job you put in the system. So our revenue actually was seasonal at that time. There was no winter revenue for the first 12 months, which was kind of tough because you get through the season and you're like, here we go for the next 6 months. Like,
it's just saved up enough nuts.
Yeah, exactly right. It was like a squirrel gathering nuts for the whole season. It was actually a few months ago. So we got clients in America recently enough, and they're not seasonal, which is great. So it's obviously year-round revenue. We've actually got a customer I mentioned before the podcast in Thailand, and obviously the weather there, they almost nearly don't have seasons. It's just mid 20 degrees or whatever, 75 degrees Fahrenheit in US, and they're constant, and they're actually really busy caddy programs as well. Mm-hmm. So they'd be one of our highest MRR customers for revenue. We actually had another idea in terms of our pricing strategy, and it was actually to do with the fast action discount that you mentioned. So we still offer usage-based pricing if clubs want to do it that way, but we also offer a discount on their rate if they want to pay upfront. So let's say, for example, a golf club does 10,000 caddy rounds per year. So we'll say it's a X price per bag, but if you want to pay upfront, we'll give you 25% discount rate. And just talking to my team there, we got four upfront payments from that in the winter months. So ironically, we've actually generated more this winter than we did the entire last summer, because we've got incentive there for people to pay upfront. We're not worried about churn. Whenever they come on, our retention rate is pretty high, so we don't worry about them leaving. But it's obviously great to have that upfront cash flow, especially at this stage when cash flow is so important. So that's how we've tackled it at the minute.
Yeah, what a smart way to overcome that seasonality. Did you ever believe that your winter revenue would beat the summer?
I had no idea. And I can't take credit for this idea. Again, this was Jamie, my co-founder. Perhaps we should put him in sales, because that was a blinding idea.
Ideas can come from anywhere. It's awesome.
That's it. And I think, going to your point as well, I think you mentioned that everyone in your organization is in sales in some degree, especially in our organization, whereas it is a lot of in-person contact and conferences and things like that. So for him to kind of take on that role as well and not just be a software head was very helpful for that idea.
I love it. I love it. So cool. Okay. So as we wrap up, I want to understand, what advice would you have for other software founders who are in those early days trying to gain traction? What would you share with them?
Yeah, I've thought about this a lot over the last few months, and I believe genuinely that persistence is just so important. I think that is the underlying bed of everything you do, because fundamentally, if you don't give up, you either genuinely you die trying, or you will find out a solution. So actually, I wrote a post about this in LinkedIn, but it was just my thoughts and what it is like to run a startup in the early days. And I think it's almost reframing your success to say that surviving and running the business is success. Actually keeping the thing alive and still doing it as your career, you're already successful, because that's what you've wanted to do for your job. You're not You're not stuck in this corporate job that you don't want to do. You're actually following your passion. So the two outcomes of that will either be the business works, or you will learn the lessons as a person that you can then apply to your next venture. So provided you just stay the course, there actually really is no bad outcome to a degree. And I think that's given me a little bit of assurance that regardless of how this turns out, obviously it's looking good right now, but you never know in startup world, there's just so many lessons personally, from the perseverance side of it to the empathy side of it. You mentioned about learning about customers and learning how humans interact and learning how to sell. I mean, sales is the most universal skill. We apply it in every element of our life. So being able to learn that fundamentally will improve the quality of my life further on, regardless. So I think, you know, and I'm guilty of this at times as well. You lump this pressure on yourself and say, oh, it's either this startup has to work, or and then you spiral down into, I'm going to have to get a real job and things like that. But it's almost saying, like, simply by following the process and committing to yourself, you've already succeeded and the results will show. So it's almost more emotional support I would give to people. I would just say, just follow the process and you'll either learn or win. One of the two will occur. I sound very wise there, but
you do. Not. That's amazing. Like, we need to put that on a plaque or something. It's brilliant. Cool. Graham, this is so awesome. I really appreciate you coming in and sharing all this with us. How can the audience learn more about you and Handycaddy?
Yeah. So very simply, I'm quite active on LinkedIn. So if you want to connect with me, it's just Graham Curry. It's I'll say founder of Handycaddy. So connect with me there. And if you want to check out the site, it's just handycaddy.com. For anyone in the golf industry, we'd be happy to show you.
Okay, perfect. We'll put all that into the show notes. So if you're listening or watching, you'll be able to grab all that there. But Graham, thanks so much for coming in and sharing all this.
Yeah, I appreciate your time, Matt. Thanks for having me on. It was a blast.
Absolutely. Likewise. And everybody out there, thank you for being here. I appreciate you watching and listening. Again, make sure that you are subscribed, because we have a lot of amazing guests coming up in the next few weeks for you. And you do not want to miss, like, what Graham just shared was incredible. His journey, you can definitely use a lot of what he's learned so that you can apply it to your own business. Others like him are coming up. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss out. And we will see you next time. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Scale Your SaaS. For more help on finding great leads and closing more deals, go to mattwallach.com.